We have returned from a short recess, and it is now 10:06. We'll do a short roll call or a quick roll call, Dr. Bastillo, to make sure everybody is present. Dr. King is, of course, absent. Dr. Bastillo?
Present.
Mr. Leone?
Present.
Dr. Hike?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
Here.
Mr. Barton?
I'm here.
Ms. Cardoza?
Present.
Ms. Richardson?
Present.
Ms. Crowley?
Here.
And I'm Judy Chepius. Dr. Bastillo, the meeting, Dr. King is still absent. Dr. Bastillo, the meeting's yours.
Okay, so we are down to 9H, initial review, 2221, Jonelle Wartenberg, PTA. And I believe this is Mindy.
Yes, this is your initial review. This complaint was filed by Ms. Wartenberg's employer at that time. The employer provided physical therapy services as a contracted provider to a skilled nursing facility in Sholo, Arizona. Ms. Wartenberg was a per diem employee at that time. The employer alleged that she created false documentation and billing for the date of service, April 2nd, 2022. They completed an internal investigation, supported their finding of falsified records, and terminated her employment. As a result of the investigative review that was completed, Ms. Wartenberg has been cited for the following potential violations: ARS 32-2044-5, engaging in the performance of substandard care by physical therapist assistant; ARS 32-2044-13, charging unreasonable or fraudulent fees for services performed or not performed; ARS 32-2044-14, making misleading, deceptive, untrue, or fraudulent representations in violation of this chapter or in the practice of the profession. And the additional violations identified were ARS 32-2044-20, excuse me, failing to maintain adequate patient records as it relates to R4-24-303-G1, a physical therapist who provides a selected treatment intervention, physical therapist assistant who provides a selected treatment intervention under general supervision shall document in the record the name and license number of the supervising therapist. R4-24-304-A3E, enable another physical therapist to assume the patient's care at any point in the course of therapeutic intervention. And R4-24-304-A.6, for each date of service, there is an accurate record of the physical therapy services provided and billed. Ms. Wartenberg received a draft copy of the investigative report, but a supplemental written response was not received by the deadline. This case is for your review.
Is Ms. Wartenberg on the call?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you. Is there anything
Dr. Bastillo, I apologize, but I just want to make sure that we don't make anything improper. Mr. Harris, I want to double check. I don't have any pending issues with Ms. Wartenberg, but I do have pending issues with her former employer, Haven of Sholo. Does that require me to recuse myself?
I don't believe so. It sounds like it's more of an appearance, perhaps. And as long as you think you can be independent and not let that, that nexus impair your ability to independently make it on this case on the facts. But that ultimately, Josh, will be up to you.
Okay. I think I'm fine to do it, but I had made that note, wanted to confirm before we went any further into it, and I just didn't want to get us in trouble.
Well, so, thank you for bringing that up.
I apologize, Dr. Pasillo.
No problem. Okay. Ms. Wartenberg, do you have a statement, or would you like to say anything?
I actually just gotten dropped from the call, and so I didn't hear the beginning of this, but I have read over the emails and had given a statement that I had emailed quite a few months back.
Yes, the board has all that material, Ms. Wartenberg, as part of their review.
No, I don't believe I need to add anything. There's all included.
Okay, thank you. Would you be willing to answer some questions?
Yes.
Perfect. Does anyone have questions regarding this case?
Ms. Wartenberg, one of the things that I read in the documents was that you were working with multiple patients in the room, but billing individual charges. Is that accurate?
There was a couple. So in this setting, how we've done it, I mean, I've started some patients on one exercise. We have, again, I didn't hear the beginning of this conversation. I apologize. I'm in Texas right now. Before we've pulled a bunch of people into the gym, you know, while one's resting, we would have another work. I've always been told, I think I've told Mindy, or was it you, Mindy, that I spoke with before?
Yes.
Yeah. We just, you know, we bill, they've told us, you know, due to productivity, you know, they've had us pull everyone in and then we bill for our time. If one's resting, I think I only had put one, there was two that were in a room, that I kind of worked with together. One would do the exercises at the same time. Just the cognitive issues going on, but, you know, we would, I'm sorry, I feel so lost on this. I'm trying to go over the email right now. Yes, I have billed for them. We were told to bill for our time. Medicare rules have changed quite a bit. So, you know, as far as I was told to come in, do the treatment, and then bill for our time. Yes, they could be billed individually if one was resting and one was working, doing the exercises, or not at the same time.
Okay. And then in regard to the other situation I saw in there, I just wanted to clarify. So there was a situation with a patient where the COTA took the patient to the new step, and you were kind of behind the patient talking with her husband. But were you involved in the treatment at all, or was the COTA doing all of the treatment?
No, yes, I was there. I helped with the transfer. The way the COTA told me is that there was no way we were going to get physical therapy that day. She was kind of anxious. I said, well, just go ask her. And she goes, if you want, she made it seem like the patient would only talk to her and work with her. And so I agree, you know, I was coming out of a room adjacent to there across the hallway. And I was coming out as she was talking her into coming in and just, you know, trying to do a little bit more therapy for the day. And so I kind of let her talk, but I was right behind them the whole time. When we were transferring on to the new step, I locked the brakes. I was standing by right behind her. But Dakota was talking to her the entire time because that's how she made it seem like the treatment had to be done. She only trusted her. She had some anxious anxiety issues. But yes, I was there. We monitored her. I was talking to the husband while she was doing, you know, while we turned the chair for her to perform the activity. Standing there the entire time. I'm not sure why why she never said she. I'm just confused about the whole situation.
Okay.
She did say that she would transfer her back off because then she started to cry and she just kept apologizing to both of us that I'm sorry, I'm not used to this kind of attention. So I felt it was best to let Kim continue to do the talking without making her feel crowded or stressed.
Okay, thank you.
So, this is Karen Bustillo. So, I guess you're considering what you were doing with that patient at that time, a co-treatment with the COTA?
Not really, because the patient was the one performing the activity. She was just talking to her.
All right. I just want to be clear. And then there's, I guess, some discrepancy that I've seen about the time that you were in the building that day. It says that you charged for about 6 hours of treatment time, but left after about 4 hours. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I've always been told, I told them I had things to do that day. I was also promised a stipend by this company that was never paid, because they said I didn't fulfill my obligations, which is apparently common with this company. And I don't know if it was brought up how there's actually a federal court case going on against this company, where over, at this time, 40 therapists are involved with this company, and, you know, having a document off the clock and whatnot. But they, there's complaints as well about this company causing problems so they don't have to fulfill their promises for stipends, things like that. But I have always been told this company, if we do, to log our time and get paid for what they offered us to, you know, if I was come in, they said, you have 6 hours, that's what you get paid for. I told them I had to leave, but I was also told to still bill for my time. So I, again, when Medicare made their changes, no one had ever given me a formal way of billing. You know, how it used to be is you bill for your reg levels, your times. There were certain rules with seeing more than one patient at one time. They said that now it kind of all goes around, you know, with the, each patient had 300 minutes per week to bill, and they spread that out. There was a lot of confusion with that. But, you know, when I came in, I billed for my time. I've never billed for time for a patient that I have not seen ever. But I did. I was there. I left probably an hour, I want to say an hour and a half before. I told Kim that was one of the issues that, you know, I was like, I have to get going. She said, it's no problem. I'll take her back to her room. And so I left, but I billed for my time for the day. They said they'd pay me for 6 hours, so that's what I billed for, or whatever the exact time was.
So that 6 hours of billed time, is that taking into account that you were doing multiple treatments in groups and then billing them individually, or is it only taking into account that you were just billing for 6 hours because that's what they were paying you for?
That's what I billed for. That's kind of was common in this setting. They said, you know, again, I wasn't paid the $500 stipend, but again, I can't recall. I believe I made a written statement of actually breaking down what I was doing. It is common practice in that facility where everyone would bring in the patients for the day. A lot of us had the same patient. If one was done, then the OT would take over. But we'd bring them in kind of as a group, because that it was just how we got everyone to come in. We'd make them coffee, we'd do whatever. They'd hang out at the gym for the morning. Some patients would come in. But I don't believe, I think the only one that was questioned is a group or the two that were in the room, and the nurse had said she never saw me in there more than 10 minutes, which I don't know how that is, because there's no nurse anywhere around. It was hard to even get them to administer medications, let alone someone sitting there and watching my time. I do believe this was all statements from Kim, which was a CODA I had worked with and been director of rehab over her before. And we did have some issues prior. But from what I get from the note or the letter or the complaint, it was that it was Kim saying that the Haven came to her and made statements about all of this. I'm just not sure where all this came from. Kim, you know, Kim herself had left multiple times throughout the day to go take care of her children. I'm not sure where anyone's getting any of this as far as Kim or Haven. I've worked with multiple facilities over the state. I've traveled with this company forever. As again, director of rehab before, and I have a hard time not thinking that this was brought on about, you know, just prior instances Kim and I have had. I guess coming back to your question about grouping, I mean, again, they never went over how to bill, but I didn't bill for any grouping because, you know, if one's resting and I'm working with another, I didn't feel that was grouping. But, and I think I explained to Mindy, if anything, yes, I left earlier than the time that I account for patients, but that's what I was told to bill for.
So, Janelle, this is Mr. Barton. From what you're saying, I guess I'm hearing two things, and I want to confirm that that's the case. I'm hearing that sometimes there was a practice in the facility that you engaged in wherein you would treat at least two patients simultaneously by alternating between one resting and the other doing exercises with the other. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then on at least some occasions, there was a practice in the facility that you engaged in, wherein you would charge or bill for a shift that you were told you would be paid for, even though you did not work that full shift.
Well, sometimes we go, you know, and we log in, you know, with other companies such as Synertex, you go, and if you're doing any kind of documentation outside of what you were in the building, you were allowed to bill for that time as well. I don't recall if I was able to do that because I don't think I was able to log into the system that they were using at the time to document. But yes, I billed for that.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you feel that there was ever a time that you didn't see a patient perhaps and documented that you may have?
Never.
Okay.
Anything, it was common practice just to keep patients in there because they were bored. They liked to come in, and we could have billed for hours that we billed for what they're in there. So I don't think ethically I did anything wrong. I've never billed for a patient that I didn't see. Even when Medicare, when the rug levels were the way they were, you know, I'd have my job threatened if I didn't see a patient and they weren't able to do the treatment. So I've never done that in the 10 years I've been doing this. So I'm just really unsure about the complaint charges of billing for a patient I didn't see. I wasn't even aware that I was let go of the company because they were supposed to call me back when I had access to a computer. And I never heard from them. The next thing I heard was I had a complaint with the board for improper billing and that the company had let me go. That was a surprise. I had already told them I was no longer going to do any work for them because I was working two other jobs at the time.
So was that like a part-time PRN position that you were in?
Yes.
Okay.
That's why they had offered the $500 stipend. So I told them, I wasn't comfortable with the practices going on there. anyways, you know, you'd show up as an assistant and they wanted you to do the restorative nursing for Haven as well. And I just said it was too stressful. I have since moved out of skilled nursing setting because of stressful factors. That's when they had offered the $500 stipend to work those 2 weekends. I said, fine, this is it. And then this all happened, and then they said they weren't paying that stipend. It's not uncommon with this company, so they don't have to pay bonuses or stipends they offer. They just get you to do the work because they need it done. And they had also, at the time, had offered me director of rehab over both facilities, Haven and Stolo and Lakeside. And Kim was acting as temporary DOR at the time, and I told her that, so I don't know if it upset her. I really don't know where all this is coming from, but...
Any other questions? Does anyone have thoughts on a motion?
My initial thought is to potentially open a case just to get more information on it.
This one is an initial review, so a complaint's been opened, case is opened, and so you have all the available options to you at this time.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was looking at that wrong then. Yeah, well, one of the things that just isn't making sense to me is being on the clock for 4 hours but billing for 6 hours. I don't know, that it's just not making sense to me. And I've not worked in skilled nursing or inpatient. I did clinical rotation, and from my experience, you typically see every patient individually. You don't necessarily see them, in a group setting or something like that. So I'm trying to figure out here, is 6 hours being billed because she's double booked on time slots or something like that with her patients? I don't know. Anybody who has some experience in that field, by all means, please share with me, you know, where that could potentially be coming up.
Well, I think you have to look, if I might, help you understand it. So the record needs to reflect accurately what was performed. And the only timestamp that was on the narrative notes was 12:30 for all of these 12 patients, which had to be manually entered because Ms. Wartenberg admits that she was in Phoenix at the time. She was on the way to Phoenix. So you've got records that aren't demonstrating when the actual time that the patient was treated. So it's really hard to validate that. But to your point, 6 hours of individual treatment would equal, of the 12 patients, if you add up all the billing, it was 6 hours and 10 minutes. But if you're going to concurrently treat two patients at a time, there are two things to consider. You don't get double the time. I mean, you're there with two patients for 30 minutes from 9 o'clock to 9:30. Those patients aren't receiving direct treatment to what she's testifying, is that while one's resting, the other one's doing exercises and vice versa. So what really is the total treatment time? Is it 30 minutes or is it really 15 minutes? Because you've got these various, you can't bill for rest breaks.
Yeah.
So you have to also keep that in mind as well. And if you look at the billing, it's all billed as individual treatment with a length of time that generally averages 30 to 45 minutes. And all of the narrative notes are signed off by her at 12:30.
Yeah, and see, and that's what I'm thinking here is just it doesn't seem right. Something seems off about that.
Well, and that's not something they ever said. They've always told us that we could bill for. I mean, that's part. Resting time is part of your treatments. We don't exercise someone, let them rest. And I mean, because if that was the case, and we have to adhere to productivity standards, then we just work them all. Don't allow breaks. And
you just can't bill. You can't bill for a patient not engaged in skilled therapy, and resting is not engaged in skilled therapy.
If you're monitoring O2. Or
if your documentation,
I don't get how that's not part of it.
Your documentation would need to reflect that.
I've never not allowed, I mean, even in outpatient settings, patients rest and you see them for an hour, their scheduled time. In that setting, if any, I'm not sure who has worked in skilled nursing, but that's one of the issues with this company right now is just, you know, to keep up with their productivity standards, you have to, it's kind of how we have to practice in that setting. And that was just a logical way for me, without saying that I saw a patient for a certain hour, I'm not in agreement with that with this company, I think they got up to where their productivity is 98% requirement, which is their current case right now. Is, therapists having to clock out and document off the clock and being forced to do treatments when we tell them, the patient's not even, able to perform this much. I think that's why a lot of the Medicare minutes and laws were changed for rug levels. I think the charge was that I was billing for patients I didn't see, and that's not the case here. And I mentioned that to many. If anything, yes, I left the building, but I didn't. There's never a time I didn't see these patients I billed for.
I think one of the problems is it seems like you're going off of what the company you're working for is telling you is okay to do, and honestly, that's not the way that you should be looking at it. You have to know the rules as a therapist. You have to know what you're allowed to do. You can't go off of the word of a company, especially one that it seems like you already have trust issues with anyway. So,
right, and that because it's our license on the line. That's why these companies have no problem making you do things, and you have to learn to stand up for yourself and what is by law, law and your license and what's allowed and not allowed. But I was never told that rest breaks weren't allowed to be billed for. I mean, and technically I wasn't billing for them if I'm alternating patients. And a lot of times they were in the gym for 2-3 hours at a time. They were getting more than the therapy that I billed for.
I think the issue that concerns me is the way that I do this math and the way that I'm looking at this. It just looks a lot like double billing. It looks like you're billing for two patients at the same time, one of them on rest and one of them doing therapy. And again, I'm a public member, so I only have the regulations in front of me, but that seems like it's a concern. That seems like it's an issue. Because you're charging twice for the same amount of time, which would seem to call into question whether this is a charge for unreasonable services or it's an unreasonable fee for the services provided. And I get it. I mean, we have had many, many discussions among this board about the concerns with these large companies that are very difficult for us to regulate because they're not specifically licensed. They're reliant on individual licenses. I'm sympathetic to those concerns, but at the end of the day, I'm concerned from what we see here. It looks like there's double billing, and I'm struggling to see how that would not be a violation of 2044.13.
And I don't have that in front of me to see, to refer to what you were talking about, but is that on my initial?
It would have been an investigative report that I sent to you, Janelle.
Okay.
So are we feeling like we can do something with this, or should we bring this to an informal hearing?
So, Mr. Greer, my feeling of this is disciplinary, and that, of course, we need to go to the next step.
A consent agreement or informal hearing? I'm not sure I will be able to, I'll need some guidance from you if you want additional investigation, what area you would like me to focus under an informal hearing.
Understood.
I mean, I guess I have kind of two areas that I'm concerned about. Number one, I'm concerned about the billing practices. I also am concerned that this is not the first, and I'm sure it will not be the last time we have heard that these facilities or these therapy companies are suggesting practices that are questionable. I believe the last time we have done that, we have gone and taken a look at other physical therapists to see if it is a consistent problem. That may be advisable here as well. I don't know how we would go about doing that, because in this case, we don't have other therapists we've identified specifically, but that, you know, that's another concern. And I say that recognizing that that may result in my refusal in some of those cases, given that I have pending matters against this facility, though not Reliant Rehab, but the nursing home.
Well, Ms. Wartenberg should have had a supervising physical therapist, and that therapist certainly could be looked at in this case.
That was another thing. We used to have to document that under every note. And they said that I didn't have to put it on each individual note, that it was supposed to be, again, this was over a year ago. That's probably why I didn't have that listed there in my note. We used to have to put it individually.
So do you
that it was
know
documented on our main paper? Yes, we always had to check. I never worked without that, because I always asked them, you know, who is the supervising? Now I can see where that would be beneficial, especially if you were going to PRN to put that on each note. I believe at the time it was I would have to look back. There was a gal that was a PT in the area that was working at the hospital. It was one of the PTs working for that company.
So, Mr. Greer, you had been discussing a possible move to an informal hearing, correct?
My thoughts are, I think this case cannot be resolved with the disciplinary remedies we have available to us right now. I think this is a case that is going to require either a disciplinary consent agreement or a disciplinary order, which we can't do at an initial review. So I think this case needs to go forward. I don't know if it needs to go to a formal hearing yet. I don't know if this is suspension or revocation. I am unswayed by the defense that my employer made me do it. You know, the certificate holder is responsible for her license, and she needs to know what the rules are, and I think she doesn't. Or if she does, she's ignoring them to order to appease an employer who's requiring significant productivity. But I think this is a disciplinary case. I don't know if we want to take the time to try to parse together a proposed consent agreement. Perhaps we just move it forward to an informal hearing, and then we can adjudicate it as I think appropriately at the next hearing. But if someone wants to try to put together a proposed consent agreement, I'm happy to listen. I don't really want to do that right now. I don't know if we need any more investigation. I would like to talk to the employer because, you know, the math doesn't seem to make sense. It looks like she clocked in at 8:05 and left at 9:37 and somehow found time to bill 6 hours of work there. So those are my thoughts.
John, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I agree. I think billing is a concern for me. Billing for 6 hours and then being gone for part of it, that doesn't make any sense to me. So I would agree with Mr. Greer's comments. I have not worked in a skilled nursing facility. I understand the RUG requirements of 2 to 3 hours in terms of rehab. Also feel that in terms of the CODA and the treatment that was done, the patient is not aware that the PTA was giving any care and did not necessarily see my skilled care in terms of putting that patient on a new step. And that's concerning to me.
That's why we even brought her back to the gym, though. She was told she was coming to do physical therapy. And I was actually having a conversation with her husband who was standing right by us. So I'm not sure why she would think, I don't know if maybe the facility was trying to charge her or why she would say she wasn't getting those services. I mean, I was there. You could hear me speaking. And that's the only reason why she was even asked to come to the gym. She still needed to do physical therapy.
I'm sorry. I think we're in deliberations right now.
So I guess I'm actually inclined to agree with Mr. Greer. I would like to see Ms. Richardson, as far as additional information, I'd like to know if there's any policies from Reliant regarding billing. And if they have any kind of a written policy, I think that would be helpful here. I would also like to know who this person's, who Ms. Wartenberg's supervising physical therapist was. You know, and so I think that would be helpful, because I suspect that we may want to look at that as well.
I believe it was, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk, sorry, but now that I'm thinking back, there was a DOR that had left, and I believe she was our supervising ET. That's why Kim was in there as a temporary fill-in to help with scheduling.
I can obtain that from the employer.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful.
Yeah, those are the two big areas I'd like to see. And then given the timing concerns, I mean, we have some documentation, but I'm curious if there's additional documentation about what exercises or medical records from maybe the nursing home. Ms. Richardson, it looks like you're kind of shaking your head on that one. Have we asked the nursing home as well?
I didn't ask the nursing home. What you have is what the subcontracted therapy provider is. So Ms. Wartenberg was employed by Reliant Rehab, and that's what I requested. I did not request nursing home documentation.
My professional side experience suggested the nursing home may have some additional documentation as well, so that may be helpful
Okay.
To our investigation as well. But I'd be inclined to second Mr. Greer's motion, and instruct our staff to go out and obtain that information and any other information that the other members of the board think may be helpful.
And I guess for clarity's sake, I move that we forward this matter to a formal hearing with requested information mentioned by Mr. Barton. Informal hearing, not formal hearing. Sorry.
Second that.
Any further discussion from the board? Mindy, do you feel like you have enough to?
Yes, I do. Thank you for that direction.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, Judy, please call the question.
It has been moved and seconded to move case 2221, Janelle Wartenberg, PTA, to an informal hearing, and staff has been directed to obtain additional investigative information. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, staff will be in touch with you, Ms. Wartenberg, about the future.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to case 2236, Todd Leonese, PT. Mindy?
Yes, this complaint was filed by one of Mr. Leonese's patients, NB. NB alleged that Mr. Leonese's conduct was unprofessional, inappropriate, and he did not provide an opportunity for her to give consent before he unfastened her bra and touched her thoracolumbar region. Mr. Leonese in the investigative report was cited for 32-2044, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist. And as it relates to R424301, lawful practice, D, a physical therapist shall obtain a patient's consent before examination and treatment and document the consent in the patient's record. ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate patient records. And as it relates to R424304, adequate patient records. Mr. Leonese received a copy of the draft investigative report, but did not provide a written response by the deadline. This case is for your review. And I believe NB is on the call and had indicated to me she wished to read a statement.
Great. Thank you. Is Mr. Leonese on the phone? You're on the call?
Yes, I am.
Is there anything that you would like to say at this time?
I have nothing to add at this time. I'm just here to answer any questions you all may have.
Great. Thank you. Patient NB, would you like to read your statement?
Yes, thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank the board for the opportunity to make a statement. Also, I appreciate your time and consideration regarding this matter. I did not file my complaint hastily nor easily. I struggled many hours and weeks to make my decision to file. I have had multiple physical therapists from various facilities and in several different states over the years. I have never had any experience with these types of issues with any of the other physical therapy treatments I've received in the past. My main intent for filing this complaint is to do what I can do to prevent any client from having to go through what I experienced during my physical therapy session on May 23rd, 2022. I do not recall any type of assessment being conducted at the beginning of the appointment. I was not told what type of treatment on my back that I was going to be given. Also, I was not given any opportunity to give my consent to have my back exposed, nor for my bra to be unfastened. The treatment I received that day was disrespectful, unprofessional, very painful, and inappropriate. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you. Would you be willing to answer any questions that the board may have?
Yes, I would.
Great, thank you. Does the board have any questions for Mr. Lyonnais at this time?
Mr. Lyonnais, what is your typical routine when you first begin interacting with a patient for their appointment? If you can kind of guide us through that.
Well, I ask almost every patient coming through the door, how is it going? Are you getting better? Something along those lines. Are we being effective? From the moment one of my clients walks through the door, I'm assessing how they're moving. How are they walking? Are they swinging their arms, et cetera? Do they seem to be in excruciating pain? Is there a limp? You name it. At that point, after asking how they're doing, we would bring them to a room to, well, in a case like this, to start with a little heat to make the hands-on treatment more comfortable. I was there when she transferred on to the plinth in order to start the heat treatment and noticed that not only did she not swing her arms walking through my gym, she didn't flex her trunk or rotate her trunk at all in transferring onto the plinth, which indicated to me that she was probably having some involvement at her back related to the limp that she has due to the osteoarthritis at her hip, and she's awaiting a total hip replacement. So she would have gone on the heat. After she goes on the heat, I would come and tell her what I observed and why I wanted to treat her back. At that point, she asked me if she thought I thought her back was out, and I still wouldn't know until I laid hands on it. At that point, we would talk about what we were going to do for treatment, and I said that the majority of what I do is deep tissue work, and I was going to need access to her back, basically from her hips to almost her shoulders, and that if she was ready to start, I would need her to lie face down. At that point, she lied face down, and I started the treatment. The treatment started at the piriformis, as she'd experienced before with my other therapists, and progressed the way I described in the written statement. It all went very sort of standard as far as a visit goes.
Okay. Was there a clear asking of consent to unfasten her bra?
I did not ask to unfasten her bra. I had mentioned before we put hands on at all that I was going to need access from her hips to almost her shoulders. And I was not explicit enough in explaining that I would also need to unfasten her bra and lift her shirt. I thought it was implied in access to your back from your hips to your shoulders.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Lyonnais, I'm wondering about in terms of the disconnect between your statement in terms of she made statements that she had no idea what was going on and that you were not communicating, but yet right. That you just explained and in your statement, I would think would be standard practice as a PT to work on someone to tell them what it is that you're going to do.
Absolutely. Standard practice to the point that it's something I say verbatim, you know, 24 times a day. Absolutely.
In a written statement that she just said, she said, sorry if I misquote this, that there was no evaluation. In this treatment of care that you were doing, you weren't there to evaluate her. Correct, you were doing a treatment of someone else.
There's always a little reassessment when somebody comes in through the door, but I wasn't there to do a formal reevaluation.
Sure, sure. And then in terms of your treatment technique, mostly doing soft tissue work. Is that correct?
almost entirely. I taught her one exercise on top of that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So it's my understanding that this was kind of the first time that you had seen this patient.
Yeah.
He was being
treated
by.
It was the first time that I was going to put my hands on this patient. I'd been involved in her care for the time she'd been a patient with ours, which was several months.
Okay.
Whether it was just asking her, are you getting better as she comes through the door, or assisting with my other therapists. But it would be the first time I was actually going to put my own hands on her. The hands-on part of the treatment was always done by a different therapist prior to this incident.
Okay. So, and you're talking about when she's arrived that you're, you know, noticing her gait and how, you know, stiff she appeared and things like that.
Yes.
And if you haven't touched her before, treated her recently, did you have her do any lumbar range of motion or any type of, visual assessment prior to her laying down?
There was no formal testing, just the visual assessment of her moving around the plinth, both to get on the hot pack, to get off the hot pack, and to lie prone on the table. Even lying prone on the table, she didn't come up into prone on elbows on her way down. She maintained a relatively stiff torso.
Had in previous treatments, had her lower back or mid back been treated, or mostly
no.
Just her hip? Okay, so this was the first time.
Hip IT band, yes.
Okay. And can you talk to me a little bit about some of your reassessment methods, use of your PTA, doing some of your
So at this particular point in time,
you.
I had lost a therapist, and we are trying our best to maintain quality of care for all of our patients, and we were working as a true team at that point. And mm-hmm. So if my PTA was comfortable with it, I would hand them the previous objective portion of a reassessment and have them go through it for me. And then if they had questions, they would come and check back with me.
Okay.
But it was very much a true team effort in my clinic at that point in order to make sure all the patients got the quality of care they deserved. There were probably visits where all three of us worked with one client
mm-hmm.
in order to make sure they got what they needed. There might have also been points where I had aides do flow sheets and that sort of thing in order to make sure it got done.
You weren't the person that did this patient's initial evaluation, correct?
No, I was not.
Okay. So anywhere in the record, my memory is escaping me right this second. Was there any lumbar or other back evaluation done as part of this initial evaluation?
This is the first time anybody addressed her back, or it seemed necessary to address her back.
Okay. It seems that before you're going to treat it, you would want to assess it.
Part of laying my hands on her back is doing exactly that. I'm doing joint play assessment, and I'm assessing the soft tissue as we come across. If we had put her into the position prone, and when I put my hands on her and did PA glides, et cetera, there wasn't a restriction, then I wouldn't have continued with the treatment. In this case, all there was soft tissue restriction, and it was fairly significant. The PA glides were normal. There was no sign that there was any sort of facet involvement. Her leg length was even when we put her on the hot pack to begin with. I tested her her leg length positionally, and there is nothing there of concern. And so it really seemed to be soft tissue involvement at the lumbar spine that was causing her to move so stiffly. And if I didn't address that in a timely manner, it could actually become a problem that needed a formal evaluation and prevent her success with what we were trying to do. In her particular case, she was in a holding pattern awaiting a total hip replacement. Her surgeon had left one organization and moved to another and was waiting to get her insurance verifications done so that she could go back to doing surgery. And so our primary objective for her was to keep her as mobile and active as possible so that she didn't atrophy before she had the opportunity to have her surgery. And that was the focus of her treatment.
That's great. But unfortunately, if it's not documented in words like that, it's hard to know that that's what you did.
I understand.
I am kind of curious. One thing I noticed was that the note was completed originally on May 23rd, but then an appendix took place in September. Later, adding in some specifics around the range of motion of the lumbar spine and the thoracic junction. Why was that added in so far down the road?
The chart had not been audited till then to realize that the note that had been submitted was just forwarded from the previous visit. It wasn't that visit. And I wanted to show specifically all of you, that is all I would have added to that note at the time I did it. There would have been no other extraneous information. It seemed very simple and straightforward at the time that nothing about the visit came off exceptional. It would have been exactly what I wrote in that second note had I written it correctly at the time of the visit. Again, at that time, we were working as a team, and so must have at some point opened the note to do the note and closed the note without actually finishing it because I'd been called off to do something else. It's the sort of thing that typically shows up on an audit, but there's no reason for her to have come back up for an audit at that point. We didn't know why she had stopped coming to see us. We assumed it was that she was going to have her surgery, and we expected to hear back from her and do a reevaluation post-surgically. And so we wouldn't have audited the chart or discharged her or anything. She was just in a holding pattern.
Thank you.
So I guess in terms of the things that you've learned, Linus, from this experience, what things would you have done differently if you were to do this over again?
So I'm absolutely guilty of assuming a level of confidence with the patient that I didn't actually have, just because I've been speaking to her on a regular basis as she came into the facility and I'd been in the room with her when other people were treating her. I didn't have the confidence that I thought I did. And so I find myself checking with my patients a lot more than I previous did. We're good. You're feeling all good. This is going okay. And a lot more looking for a lot more verbal feedback, whereas previously I was comfortable with nonverbal feedback. You can tell when a client's relaxed. You can tell when they're breathing normally. And I may have relied on those things too heavily, which led to this incident. And that's what I've changed in my practice is I just find myself not forcing, but encouraging less verbal clients to be more verbal for me so that I know we're on the same page and they get what we're doing.
there any change in your documentation or direction to staff?
I no longer have PTAs working for me, so all of the therapists in the building are PTs right now. I can't say I won't have PTAs in the future, but I would hope it's not because I'm suddenly finding myself drastically understaffed. At the same time, I would use my PTA in the same way. Again, it seemed to be successful. And the more we did it over the time period we need to, which was probably May until August, the better we got at our communication and our ability to make sure we had a full picture documented. This literally would have been one of the first reevaluations done in that manner, and out of necessity.
And then one question about your orthopedic preference or theory. Sometimes it's referred to as tribe, which is not my language. But in terms of what the physical therapist that originally saw patient NB versus your training, is there a difference in the training?
No, actually, the original therapist would also have a Bachelor of Science in Physical Therapy, not a more advanced degree, and works very similar to the way I do. There was actually a complaint after the first visit, and we moved her to a more gentle therapist, and did our best to keep her that way until I was the only one available.
So what continuing education courses have you done in terms of your suggest it would be a soft tissue concern?
Myofascial release, strain, counter strain, dry needling. In cases like this, if I didn't feel like it was good to continue with the soft tissue work I was doing, I would have stopped and offered another alternative like dry needling, or even just moving to a gentle traction and then maybe coming back to the soft tissue work. But I didn't realize I was being as traumatic to the patient as she feels I was.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have any other questions? Okay. All right, do we have any thoughts on what we'd like to do?
My initial thoughts are to potentially go forward with the non-disciplinary con ed, focusing on documentation. I'd like there to be something along the lines of, you know, consent and things of that nature. I just don't know if those kind of courses are out there. So I'm wondering if an ethics course might be suitable for something like that. I'm open to thoughts of anyone else.
I would agree on documentation. I know we've talked about professional communication in the past. I think that might be. Something we could look at.
Agreed. I think the things that brought forward that he's learned were helpful. I would have liked to have heard him say something about documentation. I think that would be important to include. I think he sees its errors that he made, and I also think that he has ideas of how he's changing. Perhaps we need to guide him with documentation to documentation course and help in terms of that understanding of consent. I don't know if there's any specific course, but I think that would be good. You know, I personally have a really hard time with the idea of unbuttoning someone's bra. I've never done that, nor would I ever do that. And that is concerning to me, but perhaps not in terms of what he's displayed in his response, that's normal practice. The other thing that I thought in terms of thinking about orthopedic practice was there's a group from physical art that basically says soft tissue is the issue, and I didn't hear that specifically in terms of his coursework, myofascial release being one of them, but if people is doing something different than the other physical therapists and felt that person's normal pelvic motion needed to be returned help in terms of addressing or hip pain, that would be an important avenue to take for that patient. I could see doing that. And as a person that comes in and has a lot of per diem work, I've been in that situation where in terms of evaluating someone, you want to make sure that you, as you said, Dr. Castillo, evaluate the aspect of how they're moving before you're actually treating it. Even though you're watching it and as each patient is coming in and out, I think that's super important to evaluate.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like that's a whole tenet of manual therapy, is that you evaluate, treat, and reevaluate, whether that's through vision or range of motion or palpation. There has to be some initial assessment as to why you're treating, what you're treating, especially when you haven't seen somebody that you're laying your hands on for the first time. I would like to see something. I do think we can do a consent agreement here. With the findings of the violations that have been outlined in the investigative report. And I'm just going to throw out there 6 hours of documentation. And for CEU, and then I think there should be a consideration of an 8-hour orthopedic class, hip or spine.
Dr. Castillo, is this a disciplinary consent agreement or a non-disciplinary consent agreement?
I think we can only,
because if it's non-disciplinary, we can just order it right now. We don't have to do a consent agreement. We can just order non-disciplinary continuing education at this point.
Okay. I'm totally good with that.
I'm looking at Mr. Harris to make sure he's nodding, but I think I'm
okay.
Right there.
Yeah, he's not on my monitor.
Nope, you're absolutely correct. You can just go ahead and issue a non-disciplinary order for continuing education. And the motion would just need to articulate education.
Okay. So those are the two that I would like to see. I don't know if anyone else has any further suggestions.
I don't. I would second the non-disciplinary.
Would you like to make that a motion, Dr. Castillo, for a
I will make that order? A motion. Yeah, for a non-disciplinary order for continuing education, 6 hours of documentation and 8 hours of an orthopedic class evaluation and treatment of either hip or spine.
Second.
And could I just ask what the time frame would be?
6 months.
You know, I apologize. I'm getting a lot of background noise.
A lot of feedback.
Yeah.
I just muted it.
Okay, thank you. Sorry,
Yeah, in 6 months.
Thank you.
And would that go toward continuing education hours for his license, or are we not allowing that?
We are not allowing that.
That's, yeah.
And then
that's standard in our virtual. That's standard in our orders, I think.
That's
okay. I wasn't sure if we had to specify that or not.
And the courses have to be approved by the board.
Yeah.
Staff. Any further discussion? Okay, Judy, can you call the question?
It has been moved and seconded to issue a non-disciplinary board order for continuing education, which shall be completed in 6 months. Courses must be pre-approved. They may be completed online and do not count towards renewal requirements. The continuing education shall be in the areas of documentation for a minimum of 6 hours and orthopedic evaluation and treatment of the hip and spine for a minimum of 8 hours.
It can be hip or?
Hip or spine.
Mm-hmm.
Corrected. Okay. And those were the only classes, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Okay, so let me read that again. I got sidetracked. I apologize. The motion before you is to issue a non-disciplinary board order for continuing education, which shall be completed within 6 months. The courses must be pre-approved and may be completed online. They do not count towards the renewal requirements, but shall be completed in the areas of documentation for a minimum of 6 hours and orthopedic evaluation and treatment of the hip or spine for a minimum of 8 hours. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Did Mr. Greer second that motion?
Yes.
He did.
Thank you.
Okay. Great. We can move on here. Now we're down to board business and reports. And we got the complaint process flow chart. Is that you, Mindy? Did you?
Yes, that is okay. Me. I just wanted to make sure that patient NB knew that the hearing had concluded. I don't know if she's still on.
Oh, thank you.
And I wanted to just thank her for participating.
She just left.
Okay. So in your board materials, I created with Judy and Mark's assistance a visual flow diagram of how some of these complaints are processed. And I tried to simplify it as much as possible. So I'm seeking some discussion, perhaps action, on specifically these preliminary reviews. So if you think about the 6 cases that you just reviewed today, in the context of this flow diagram, and if there's anything that you would like to change or modify, I'm certainly open to ideas and suggestions. But I think in the spirit of expediency, I'm part-time. I'm running several cases behind. And so when I get these cases now, what I'm trying to do in certain situations is gather preliminary information and put it in front of you to determine if it's something, frankly, worthy of pursuing a full investigation. So just following the, I don't know, Judy, if you want to bring the flow diagram up and share that, or if the board members have that up on their screens, but essentially, and I'll just give you an example. In some of the cases for DUI, a respondent might be arrested, but depending on the nature of the charges, it may take months for the actual charge to drop and further court requirements for it to be adjudicated. So as I started to think about those kinds of cases, I wanted to try and review this flow sheet with you. So we receive our complaints in two ways, either through the database, which is available on our website, or the board generates the complaint. It's evaluated then to determine if we have jurisdiction. If we don't have jurisdiction, if the complaint comes in through the portal, that complainant is notified. We don't have jurisdiction. Thank you for, you know, forwarding your concern. And then I close the complaint. If there's jurisdiction, sometimes there's some gray areas. If I'm able to identify potential violations, for example, patient claims that they're injured, I may go ahead and proceed with opening a complaint automatically and subpoenaing the patient's medical record, and then do my review, do my interviews, and present it with an initial review. But there's some cases where the potential violations are unclear, or the complaint appears perhaps to have no merit, kind of that gray area. And that's where I'm really seeking your advice, and I bring it to you before I do an additional investigative, exhaustive, you know, research on it. So I obtain preliminary information. I don't generally subpoena records. I'm basically just going with what the complainant has provided and what the respondent has provided. Sometimes the respondent provides medical information that helps to make it more clear. And at that point, if I feel like I have some information for you to review and react to, I'll bring it to you as preliminary review. Then you have the decision to either take no action or vote to open a case, which is what you've done. In some of the cases today, you opened some and some you took no action. If you open the case, it goes back into the my docket for assigning a case number, noticing the complaint, the respondent more formally, and then I complete my investigation and it comes to you as an initial review. So I guess my question would be, And the other thing that I do is in a preliminary review, as you noticed today, I'm only identifying the respondents with their initials because a formal complaint hasn't been opened. A case hasn't been opened. So number one, do you want to keep it that way? And number two, is that working for you? The option could be, instead of looking at each of these preliminary reviews as individuals, I could potentially consider putting those as part of the consent agreement. And you could obviously have the option of pulling one out and looking at it independently, just as you do your other consent agenda items. So I'm just looking for discussion, and if you would like any type of change, and I thought kind of going through the first six cases today might help you have some more current perspective.
Mindy, on the last item, bottom right, I think what I've just heard you say in terms of would it be better served to have the word investigates potential violations as opposed to identifies?
Well, the first thing that actually happens is the respondent is sent a notice of complaint. And in that notice of complaint, potential violations are identified. So I think I pulled that language because that's what's in their notice of complaint. And it's not until I open the case and really investigate it and then you make a decision about the evidence that would support those potential violations.
Is it there or not?
Would be confirmed.
Okay.
And just as today with a couple of the cases, I wasn't sure which potential violations you might wish me to focus on and investigate further to find evidence to support that. So I'm going to ask you to help me identify which potential violations you would seek in the notice of complaint.
Okay, thank you.
Are the preliminary reviews giving you enough information to make your determinations? I guess would be the first question.
Yeah, I mean, the preliminary, I have not typically had an issue where I'm concerned about what we're seeing in the preliminary reviews. I think it gives us enough to know if there's kind of any kind of there. My concern is more, can we do something to make this more efficient for you so that you're not, you know, turning a part-time gig into a full-time gig?
Well, or conversely, the cases get more aged.
Right.
And so yeah. I did, to your point, I have turned to preliminary reviews a little bit more frequently of late just to try and get something in the queue, because when I go down the path of automatically opening a complaint, they get 30 days to provide a written response. Then I have to subpoena records, which can take several months, and you may only dismiss it. So yeah. I'm trying to tease out those that I believe might be more expeditiously reviewed under preliminary review than a full blown investigation.
And I suspect, I don't know what the other members of the board think, but, you know, one of the areas where that may be very easy to tease out is a lot of these criminal complaints, I think, are, you don't need a ton of information to know whether it's worth investigating or not. You know, my inclination is, you know, especially with these DUIs and kind of the way we have been treating them, I think we can probably dismiss a fair number of them in the preliminary review stage, and then when we have concerns that it's affecting professional practice, you know, take that additional step and go into an actual initial review. That's kind of my take, is I think that's one area where these preliminary reviews are particularly helpful. I don't know what the other members of the board think.
I'm in agreement on that. I think it would be worth looking into potentially doing Mindy's idea of maybe putting those into the consent agenda and kind of grouping them all together, because we do dismiss a good amount of them typically.
And being the newest guy, the program cases provide enough information to your point, Mindy, in determination.
And on this topic, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Harris, but when we agendize items for the consent agreement, or excuse me, the consent agenda, we specify a recommended action or a recommended path. So in this instance, I would assume that we are technically recommending take no action.
Or take
which really would put the onus on the board members to review the materials and pull out those that are more concerning for individual discussion.
Yeah.
Yep, that's correct.
Is it Mindy and Judy, would it be helpful to you or workable to you to kind of bifurcate it? I suspect you guys have a pretty good idea of what we are looking at, especially when it comes to these types of, you know, DUIs, criminal allegations. Could we do some type of a hybrid where if there are concerns or there are specific statutory violations that you think may be there, we can put them on the agenda, and then for those for which our staff feels like there is no merit or there may be no significant question placed on the consent agenda, we can review them. And if we feel like there's something we need to look at, we can pull them.
I believe that's possible. We have pre-board agenda review meetings where Judy and I and Mr. Harris can review the cases and either put them in the consent agenda, or if it looks like it may be more problematic, identify them as individual cases.
Okay. Because the only thing that I'm concerned about is I don't want to bog down our consent agenda with, you know, three or four discussions that we're having every month. And so I agree. I think probably 75% of these are going to be fine on the consent agenda. But, you know, if we could make it so that we can typically get through that consent agenda pretty quickly and without a whole lot of conflict, my inclination is I think that makes us move a little more efficiently.
And while there's no statutory requirement for us to identify these folks as in a preliminary review with initials. I don't know if you want to have discussion around whether or not the person's name should be included, or you want to keep it as initials for the public in the public forum.
I feel like the initials are appropriate in the preliminary stages, especially if they don't go anywhere. Obviously, if we move anything forward, their name will come out. But just because we're talking about somebody doesn't mean that it's going to rise to the level that we're going to consider any type of action. And so I think for the the protection of the professional, that seems to be reasonable in that preliminary state. I did like, truthfully, I like having them all here to be able to ask questions of. And so, should we go to that consent agenda, which I am really all for. This is, Mr. Barton was talking about trying to, separate out some of them perhaps. But to make sure that they are available just in case we do pull somebody out to question, because all cases are not 100% identical.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do notify the respondent that the case would be heard. They're only going to be identified as initials. The downside to that is on a consent agenda, they won't even know. I mean, they'll see it on the agenda if they look at the agenda, mm-hmm. initials, but they won't know that perhaps that's them. But I have notified them that their case is up for preliminary review.
Okay.
And that wouldn't change.
Okay.
And on the backside of that, when a complaint is open or if a case is opened during the meeting, then the minutes reflect that individual's name.
Okay.
As well. We have a duty as well to protect the public and credentialing yep. and whatnot is all searched through these minutes. So
absolutely.
We do specify those names in the minutes if a complaint is open, if a case is open.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I really appreciate your feedback, and I will proceed with what the discussion has directed me to do.
Great. Thank you very much, Mindy. That's a lot of work.
And Mr. Harris, should we memorialize any of this in terms of a motion, how the board wants us to continue with initials and in preliminary situations, as well as provide in a consent agenda those cases that staff believes the board may take no action, versus those that might require additional board review, more in-depth board review.
Yeah, Judy, members of the board, I suggest either that the minutes reflect the discussion this morning or that you can memorialize it in a motion.
Okay. We can make the minutes reflect the discussion if there's no motion necessary. Okay, perfect.
Great. Thank you again.
You're welcome.
Okay. We can move on to the executive director's report.
So we have a few items to bring forward to discuss. The first is the Centia Cloud software project update. Preliminarily, we were informed, we were advised, it was identified that reworking our entire system would likely take 2 months. Well, that has proven to be inaccurate. So we are still in the development stages. We are still working through the process of what's called UAT, which is user acceptance testing, which in effect, as they develop products for us, we review them, we test them, we try to come up with any situation that will cause us any kind of problem or question, understand the system. So we're still very involved in that case. section. We're working what they call, it's a system of portals. So you have an application portal, we'll have a licensee portal, we'll have a business portal, we'll have all of these different portals. We're currently on the application portal and working through that. Now that's a sizable chunk of it. Some of it might be a little more kind of prescriptive, but that's got to be really kind of specialized for our needs as a board. So we are anticipating that we will not launch until well into fiscal year 24. Most likely we're aiming at like September or October, potentially the very beginning of October, hopefully. We are gonna continue on with our testing and try to speed it along as quickly as possible, but all of this kind of development does definitely take time. And the testing has to occur, and it's intensive. It takes a lot of hours to go through those testings. So we are currently, of course, as you all know, understaffed and working to balance all the scales to keep all the day-to-day moving forward, as well as indigenous testing. So that process is to be continued. Asset, which is an arm of ADOA, is attempting to work with us, and we're not the only agency that's in the same position. In fact, most of the agencies that are switching over to Ventia are going to be moving into a 2024 situation. So what that means is we have to keep our current system active and live, which had an original end date of June of this year at the end of the fiscal year. So we have to keep that going, as well as more development going as well. So we're working. Asset is helping us to present these cases to the executive arm of budgeting, OSPB, that helps us budget future, because this will have impact on our future budget in the 2024 fiscal year. So that's where we stand right now. I will keep you updated as we have more information. We're currently awaiting a change order to. We originally get a statement of work with the project. We're looking for a change order that identifies that it needs to advance further before it's completed. So any questions about that process or progress? Okay. Then on to the next thing. This item came to us from the PT Compact. So the PT Compact Commission has drafted some amendments to their governance documents. The informal comment period doesn't end until after this board meeting. So I thought if our board or the members had any issues that they wanted our delegates to bring forth, this would be an opportunity. So I put it on the agenda for that reason only. So I don't know if anybody has any questions, concerns, or thoughts that need to be brought forth. Nope. Okay. The next one is in response to some staff absences that are going to be occurring right before the scheduled October meeting, which is scheduled for October 24th. Mindy and I will both be out of the office that week prior, causing some very distinct struggles with preparing these meetings and having it ready. So we are requesting a rescheduling of the October 24th board meeting to October 31st. And I believe to do that one, we will need a vote.
Sounds scary to me.
I thought we should all dress up.
And I think that would be a spectacular spectacular idea.
I will likely be unavailable then. I don't have any opposition to moving it. But just so that the rest of the board is aware, I'm in week two of a 2-week trial during that week.
Would you have been available on the 23rd?
I would have been available on the 23rd, but I would have been very, very stressed.
That's the day before that trial starts. So.
Well, you'll have to send pictures in costume to.
I can do that.
Remind me, I think we're not having a board meeting in November, correct?
You're correct. And so in essence, what's really going to happen, because we moved the December meeting up prior to the holidays, and to prevent that quick turnaround right before November, the board opted not to have a November meeting. So in essence, what this will do, moving the October meeting to the 31st, will minimize the time in between board meetings to a shorter time span. So,
and I don't know if we're agendized to discuss this, but could we move it to November 7th to accommodate Mr. Barton? Because we don't have one in November.
So,
believe it or not, I've got another trial that starts November 8th or November 7th.
We'll probably wouldn't
change to that.
Okay. I was just trying to think how that would potentially affect examination. But we're not there yet.
We're not going to, if he's going to say no anyway, we're not going to accommodate him. So. So I would move that we move the October meeting from October 24th to October
31st. A second. Okay, let's vote on that.
Okay, it has been moved and seconded to reschedule the board's October 24th, 2023 meeting to October 31st, 2023. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes. Thank you. And then the next item is the month of March financials. Any questions in that regard?
Keep doing good.
Here's hoping. if the Centia continues on, which it will, we will have to put some more money towards our Salesforce software that we currently have. That will happen this fiscal year. And we have been appropriated those funds, so I'm not concerned about that. And I would certainly like to ensure that we pay for it this year to make sure that we take advantage of those appropriated funds to do so. So, then the next item is the licensing and certificates that occurred in March of 2023. March was a very exceptionally heavy, exam deadline month, meaning there was more applicant focus on NPTE exams than AZ Law exams, which is typically the hallmark of the last portion of the licensing, and therefore the licenses issued those numbers are less than typical, and that was because there was more applicant focus on NPTE. So that's reflected in those numbers quite readily. We also, a new point is with the Interstate Telehealth registration, there was one registrant who was updated. So the Interstate Telehealth registration requirements are that those that have a registration update that registration on a yearly basis, which cycles on the anniversary. So that's a completely different time construct than any of our licensees or certificate holders. So So we are, now that we've had those registrations issued, we will probably successively be seeing those happen on a somewhat steady basis. But who knows? Who knows how many will continue that going?
I'm sorry, everyone. So, I have to interrupt. I have to leave to make it to the celebration. So I will see you next week.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Enjoy it. Congratulations, John.
Thanks a lot.
Congrats.
And let the minutes reflect that Dr. Hike left the meeting at 11:45. So with that, we are on to any future agenda items.
So I don't have any future agenda items, but it did dawn on me today. Mindy, would it be possible for you to add a couple of statutes to our consolidated administrative files agenda?
Say that again?
Which statutes?
I'm looking at 32.2044 and then the Arizona Administrative Code for Physical Therapists. I just find that I'm constantly digging around for those as we're discussing, and it would be helpful for me to have them to review kind of on a quick basis in that drive.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The rest of us have them all memorized, Josh. What's the problem?
I'm behind the curve.
me or Judy could do that.
Yes. Yeah.
Awesome. One of you. Judy, it probably is Judy better, but.
Is there anything we can do to help get the board more staff? I know we're understaffed. Does putting it on an agenda do anything to help you there? Or?
No. We're limited to the amount of full-time equivalent employees we can have. At this point, we are on paper sitting at 3.25 because of Mindy's construct of her position. That said, Mindy's also working basically 19 hours, so just shy of part-time, because that's what that window allows through ADOA. We then have another 0.25 under the same premise that we'll be able to, that we're working to obtain to get more investigative power, where any adjustment beyond that is going to have to be an appropriation that allows us more full-time employee in numbers. That was requested of OSPB for the fiscal year 23. They did not process that for us. So they, in effect, they provided us some finance in the budget to assist with those, but we weren't granted additional full-time equivalents to be able to utilize that. So we are understaffed in the investigative department. It's a pretty specific set of requirements for somebody in that position, as well as, it's only a part-time piece. So finding the right fit is a little bit difficult. We thought we had somebody, and since then that person wasn't going to be ready until further into the year. And since then that has not come to fruition. So we are investigating that. We are talking to individuals. We are seeking that. And then we'll have to, of course, process it through ADOA using all of the correct steps.
Josh, no more questions. That's not on the agenda. No, just kidding.
Oh.
It's a future agenda item.
Would you like us to put it on the agenda, though? And also,
if it would help get something done. If there's nothing to do, there's no reason for us to talk about it. If by putting it on the agenda, it can help move them along, then yes, I would like to put it on the agenda. But if there's no reason to, then let's not do it.
Sounds good. I think we'll just kind of defer to Judy on that.
At this point, I guess,
Judy, if it helps saying my board's clamoring to put this on the agenda, Then yeah, let's put it on the agenda. If it doesn't make any sense, we don't need that. Put it on the agenda just to not talk about it.
I will add that to future agenda items, and we will see where the possibilities might lie.
Well, I think it's going to come up in Sunset Review, because one of the things that we've been asked in the past, in my experience, is, you know, how long does it take to adjudicate cases? And they have a specific window that they like to see, and we're not meeting it. So that will come up, I'm pretty confident.
Anything else for the future agenda items? Well, then we have everybody's favorite last item. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I will motion to adjourn.
Second.
It has been moved and seconded to adjourn. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes. The meeting is adjourned at 11:51, and we will stop the recording at that same time.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.